This is Audible.
Recorded Books presents an unabridged recording of Fallen Angels by Walter Dean Myers, narrated by J.D. Jackson and directed by Brandon Schultz.
Chapter 1.
Somebody must have told them suckers I was coming.
Told who? I asked.
The Kongs, man. Who you think I'm talking about?
Why you think somebody told them you were coming?
'Cause I don't see none of them around here. They don't want their butts kicked.
Yeah, okay. I looked at the guy's name tag. It read Gates. Hey, Gates. I'll tell you as soon as I see some Kongs.
I'm going on in the bathroom, he said. Make sure there ain't none in there.
Right. I watched him wade through a sea of GIs, stopping now and again to talk to one of them.
Does he really think we're in Vietnam already?
Specialist Fifth Class Judy Duncan looked sharp in her dress uniform as she leaned against the Coke machine. Most of us were in fatigues, the Army's work clothes. I had been sitting next to Judy on the flight from Massachusetts. She had brought along an assortment of snacks to eat on the plane and was now digging into a bag of potato chips as we waited for the plane to refuel in Anchorage, Alaska, on our way to Vietnam. He's just a clown, I said. On the plane, he asked the captain to wake him up when we reached Kong City.
Where you say you were from?
New York, I answered. You?
I tell most people I'm from Dallas, she said, but I'm really from Irving. That's right outside of Dallas. I don't think anybody is really from Dallas anymore.
You took advanced training at Fort Devens?
Sam Houston in Texas. I did basic there and then went right into medical school. I got assigned to the hospital in Devens, but it got boring.
Now you going to see the world?
Something like that, she said.
She had a nice smile.
I think somebody figures if I see Nam first, everything else is going to look good to me.
The plane had been half empty coming from Massachusetts to Anchorage. We picked up about 50 more guys in Anchorage, most of them infantry from Fort Lewis. There were a few nurses with the group, too, and Judy went and sat with them. We were served dinner shortly after we were airborne, but I wasn't hungry. I usually can't eat when I'm nervous, and going to Nam made me nervous. The only reason I was going anyway was because of a paperwork mess-up. At first, my unit was scheduled to go to Nam, but a doctor at Fort Devens had said that my knee was too bad for combat duty. I was assigned to a supply company while I waited for new orders. But then my old company didn't go to Nam, they went to Germany instead, which was cool because there wasn't any fighting going on over there. And I got orders for Nam.
Look at it this way, Perry, the captain had said. The only reason you're going to Nam is that it takes forever to process a medical profile. Once it catches up with you, you'll be headed home. In the meantime, you'll get to Nam, they'll put you behind the desk in some headquarters company, and the worst thing that'll happen to you is that you catch a social disease in downtown Saigon that'll rot your Twinkie off.
I hadn't been too worried about going to Nam. From what I had heard, the fighting was almost over anyway. Our next stop was Osaka, Japan, and I slept most of the way. We landed at a commercial airport because of some kind of disturbance at the military facilities. There was supposed to be a change of planes, but they didn't have another plane available until the next morning. A tall, square-shouldered first lieutenant gave out meal tickets, and we were told we could use them at the airport cafeteria. The people at the cafeteria were civilians, and they didn't want any part of our meal tickets, even though a sergeant tried to explain to the head of the cafeteria that the U.S. Army would redeem them. Two corporals made some noise about taking the cafeteria over. What finally went down was that we all bought our own dinners. Typical Army. We spent the rest of the night sleeping on benches in the airport. A lot of Japanese civilians gave us the once-over. I bought a few souvenirs to send home, a little parasol for Mom, and some Japanese comics for my brother Ken. By morning, the cafeteria mess was straightened out, and we ate anything we wanted.
I talked with Judy at breakfast, and she told me how she had wanted to be a garbage man when she was a kid. The trucks were just the best things I had ever seen in my life, she said. She had an order of scrambled eggs and bacon, and a small mountain of toast that was disappearing quickly. When I found out I couldn't be a garbage man, I settled for being a movie star, but it was definitely second best. She asked me what I had wanted to be when I was a kid, and I told her that most of the time I had wanted to work in a drugstore and wear a white coat with buttons on the shoulder. Yeah? She shook her head approvingly. That's what I like about you, Perry. You know all the good stuff, and buttons on the shoulders are definitely the good stuff. When the plane took off for the final hop to Vietnam, the conversations got quieter. Everybody who could was looking out the windows.
Okay, listen up. A sergeant stood in the aisles with a clipboard. We're scheduled to arrive at Tan Son Nhut, the Republic of Vietnam, at 1400 hours. When you deplane, you will form four ranks in the area designated by Lieutenant Wilson. There will be no grab ass, no excessive running off at the mouth, and no wandering around. Is that clear?
Yes, Sergeant,
came the familiar chorus.
You will have your gear ready to deplane the moment we touch down. Is that clear?
Yes, Sergeant.
I had to go to the John. I thought about it for a while and looked back toward the plane's Johns. Too late. The line already stretched halfway down the aisle. It was 1320 hours, 20 minutes past 1 o'clock civilian time. We'd be in Nam in less than an hour. I thought of writing Mom and took out my paper. All I could think of was the date, September 15th, 1967. Hey, Perry. Judy was leaning over my shoulder. How's it going? Okay. Look, I just found out the nurses are going right to Chu Lai. I just wanted to wish you luck. Hey, thanks. I shook her hand. Where's Chu Lai? Who knows? She shrugged. Hot. Muggy. Bright. Muggy. That was the airport at Tan Son Nhut. We deplaned, followed Lieutenant Wilson across the field into an area in front of some Quonset huts, and started forming ranks. It took a while. The sergeant with the clipboard came along and tried to encourage us as best he could.
You faggots can't even line up straight. How you gonna fight? He shouted.
He kept on yelling, and Lieutenant Wilson started yelling, and we finally got in order. Then a captain came out, and we were turned over to him. The sergeant's clipboard was turned over to him, too.
Medical personnel assigned to the 67th Group or the 312th or the 23rd Battalion, fall out and get in those buses over there. Everybody else, stand at ease.
When the medics fell out, Judy waved to me again, and some of the guys around me told me to go give her a kiss.
That's what they do in the war movies, one guy said.
I didn't really know Judy, and I probably wouldn't have had the nerve to kiss her in front of everybody, even if I did. We watched the medics go toward the buses while the rest of us stood in the sun. I checked my watch, and it was 1430 hours. The next time I checked my watch, it was 1530 hours, and we were still standing in the sun. Once I had figured that of the 7 months I had spent in the army, four of them had been standing around waiting for something to happen. Vietnam might have been a different place, but the army hadn't changed. Vietnam. There were mountains in the distance. A helicopter hovered over the far end of the field, tilted at a crazy angle, and then flew off. I watched it until it was almost out of sight. Most of the guys around the landing field were in fatigues, no different than Fort Devens, except that half of them carried their rifles around with them. There were a lot of pistols, too. You didn't see many pistols stateside. There were Vietnamese soldiers around, too. They were smaller than I thought they would be. I tried not to stare at them. A rumbling noise off to my left sounded like distant thunder.
We knew it was artillery. My stomach felt queasy. Guys started looking at the ground. This was Nam. We had a roll call. I listened for the sergeant to call my last name. When he did, I responded with my first name, Richard. Two Marines, they had obviously been in Nam a while, came over and stood near the sergeant and looked at us. They were unshaven. Their uniforms looked worn, darker than ours. One of them was wearing a necklace of some kind. The other one had a peace symbol painted on his helmet. They were old-looking guys, older than any of the guys just coming in. We went back to waiting in the sun. We waited until 1600 hours. Then the trucks came. I was assigned to the 22nd Replacement Company. That's where I met Gates again, the guy who had been looking for Kongs in Anchorage. We bunked next to each other. Gates was brown-skinned, but he had reddish hair and freckles. I thought I was going to like him. "You see any Viet Cong?" I asked.
"Yeah, you see that girl come in here a moment ago?"
"The one cleaning the barracks?"
"Yeah, she's a Cong, man."
There were three or four Vietnamese civilians around our barracks. Two were painting the decorative rocks around the headquarters, the kind of thing that we all did stateside, and the other two were cleaning inside.
"They're not Viet Cong." "Who told you that?"
"It figures," I said. "We're fighting the Viet Cong. You don't fight somebody, then hire them to clean up."
"I remember back home, this boy come into a pool room."
"Where's back home?"
"Chicago."
Gates was lying on his back on his bunk.
"Anyway, this dude come into the pool room, and he knowed he was a good pool shot, see? So he hustled this other dude into a pool game for $20 and beat him."
"Yeah, go on."
"Well, he figured he was supposed to get his money,"
Gates said.
"But the boy he beat didn't want to pay him, so he shot him in the stomach."
Gates stopped talking and started taking his boots off. "So what's the end of the story?" I asked.
"That the end. The dude that did the figuring done figured wrong. That's why you shouldn't be figuring that chickie that be doing the cleaning ain't no Cong."
"Right." I started riding home. The Vietnamese cleaning lady came in again. She started dusting around the bunks. I looked over at Gates and he was looking at me. He smiled. "Hey, Gates," I said. "I know you're wrong."
"Don't be calling me no Gates," he said. "You call me Pee-wee."
"Okay, Pee-wee," I said. "You're still wrong."
"I can prove it to you,"
Pee-wee said.
"Watch this." "Hey, you."
He sat up and called to the Vietnamese woman.
"Mama Cong."
The woman looked at him, shrugged, and then turned away.
"Mama Cong,"
he repeated louder. "She probably doesn't even understand English," I said. A couple of other guys had turned to see what Pee-wee was doing.
"Watch if she don't split,"
Pee-wee said. The woman turned again and looked at Pee-wee. Then she left.
"See?"
There was a big smile on his face.
"She's a Cong. That's why she left. She know Pee-wee got her number."
"If you talk crazy at me,"
a heavy red-faced guy called over to Pee-wee,
"I'd leave too."
"That's because you probably a Cong,"
Pee-wee said,
"and you a ugly-ass Cong too."
The guy stood up. He seemed twice as big standing as he did sitting. He came over to Pee-wee's bunk and put his foot on Pee-wee's bed.
"Boy," he said, "I just finished 7 months of ranger training, learning how to kill little people like you. So why don't you just shut up?"
"Yo, you, what's your name?"
Pee-wee called over to me.
"Perry."
"Perry, did this Peckerwood just call me boy?"
"I think you better leave him alone," I said.
"Yeah, but did he just call me boy?"
"I can answer for myself," the ranger said. "Yes, I did call you boy. Boy."
Pee-wee turned and looked as if he were going to put his feet on the floor. Instead, he shot both legs into the ranger's crotch. The big man doubled over and Pee-wee punched him on the side of the head. Then he laid back, put his hand under his pillow, and pulled out a knife, which clicked open with a flick of the wrist.
Now you can get up and start beating on me if you want,
Pee-wee said.
But if you do, I'm gonna cut your damn throat soon as you go to sleep.
The ranger got up, looked at Pee-wee, and started sputtering something about if Pee-wee didn't have the knife, what he would do. I put Pee-wee in the letter to Mama. Chapter 2. A sergeant came in and put the lights out. Then he made a bunch of stupid remarks about what we should and shouldn't do in the dark.
Hey, Perry.
It was Pee-wee.
What? What did you do back in the world?
Just got out of school, I said.
You didn't finish either?
I finished high school.
No lie?
No lie.
Then why you come in the army?
Seemed like a good idea at the time, I said. I finished high school, but I hadn't gone to the graduation exercises. Just hadn't made sense anymore. You can go to City College, the guidance counselor had said. Your grades are good enough. I told her I'd think about it. What I was thinking about was that I had to get up every morning and dry the clothes I had washed the night before by putting them on the oven door to have something to wear to high school.
How was I going to get the clothes for college? How was I going to get clothes for Kenny so he would stay in school?
Mama had said that she'd see to it that Kenny stayed in school if I sent the money for clothes for him. I wasn't saving any money, the way I figured I would when I first got into the army, but I figured that might come later if I made sergeant. I thought of writing a letter to Kenny. He would dig getting a letter from Nam. I remembered once he was involved with a pen pal program and got a letter from some kid in Logan, West Virginia. He had looked at me with his wide, bright eyes and smiled like he couldn't believe the great thing that had happened to him. The night before I left for the army, we had sat and talked about what we were going to do in the future. No matter what I said, I knew he was sorry that I was leaving.
Reggie,
he had said before he went to sleep,
when you get to Vietnam, I hope you guys win.
The Monarchs, the neighborhood team I played for, had just lost a tournament the week before. It had bothered me a lot. I had done well, and Kenny had said that it wasn't my fault. I had given him a big speech about basketball being a team sport and that my doing well didn't matter. Either the team wins or the team loses, I had said. I had wanted to win badly. I knew I was going into the army, but for me, that was a kind of defeat. My plans, maybe just my dreams, really, had been to go to college and to write like James Baldwin. All the other guys in the neighborhood thought I was going to college. I wasn't, and the army was the place I was going to get away from all the questions. I wanted to win the tournament, to walk away from the streets I had been raised in with my head high. A winner. That night I kissed Kenny goodnight. It was the first time I had kissed him since we were both small. Pee-wee and I had breakfast together. I asked him if he liked the army, and he said it was okay.
You got all this chicken shit to go through, he said, and I don't like that. But this is the first place I ever been in my life where I got what everybody else got.
What does that mean?
Back home, when everybody got new sneakers, I didn't get none, Pee-wee said. Either moms didn't have the money, or she had the money and we had to get some other stupid thing, like food. When everybody got a bike, I didn't get one because there was no way we could get the money for a bike. But anything anybody got in the army, I got. You got a gun, I got a gun. You got boots, I got boots. You eat this lousy-ass chip beef on toast, guess what I eat?
Lousy-ass chip beef on toast, I said. Pee-wee's grin just about filled the mess tent. Most of the day was spent sitting around. Some of the guys were talking about how hard they had had it in basic training. They all had the same stories, no matter where they had taken basic. I thought the stories were probably part of the training. There were a lot of black guys. I didn't think there would be so many. Some of them stayed off to themselves, but one guy was making the rounds of all the other blacks.
The way I figure it, we gotta stick together over here.
He had three rings on the hand he waved in the air.
I can't trust no whitey to watch my back when the deal go down.
So what do you want to do? I asked.
We gotta make an oath or something,
Rings said.
You know, mingle some blood. That's symbolic of what we're going to be about over here in this strange land.
The dude was serious. I watched him take out a pocket knife and cut his wrist. Then he handed the knife to Pee-wee.
You gotta be out your mind, Pee-wee said. You sitting there cutting your own damn self. You don't need nobody watching your back.
You don't understand, Ring said.
This is symbolic of our common African blood.
Yeah, all that is cool, but I want my common African blood in my common African veins,
Pee-wee said.
You ignorant,
Rings pointed at Pee-wee.
Maybe I am, but I ain't bleeding.
Rings shook his head and slid the knife across the table to me. I got hemophilia, I said. If I cut myself, I won't stop bleeding.
You are Uncle Tom, which you is, Ring said. If you had some damn hemophilia, they wouldn't have had you in no army.
He grabbed his knife, got up, and walked away. I watched him go.
That fool is crazy,
Pee-wee said.
I don't know. He might have something, I said.
Well, whatever he got, he can sure keep it. Set up the checkers.
We played checkers until it was time for chow, the same way we had the day before. Then we ate chow and played checkers in the afternoon. Another black guy, a specialist, fourth class, came over and joined me and Pee-wee. He asked where we were from, and we told him.
I'm from Monroe, Louisiana. You ever hear of it?
No, Pee-wee said.
Ain't much to it, he said.
How long y'all been in the country?
You mean this country?
You don't have to say nothing, he said. You just told me.
How long you been here?
Pee-wee asked.
I've been here 9 months. I got sick and they sent me to the hospital over in the Philippines. You ever been in that hospital?
We just got here, Pee-wee said. How we gonna get in the hospital?
You just getting here don't mean nothing, the Spec Force said. I seen a guy drop dead getting off the plane from Hawaii.
The plane come down and landed just as pretty as you damn please. He come out, took him a good look around, and dropped stone dead.
What kind of outfit were you in? Pee-wee asked.
I was with the 24th Transportation Battalion, but I put in for a transfer because I had a run-in with my commanding officer.
What kind of run-in?
I was high on guard duty, the Spec Force said. My pal brought some smoke from Saigon and we all got stoned.
So what you doing now?
They give me a choice, transfer or court-martial, he said. So you know I got a transfer because I can't stand no jail time.
You been in any fighting?
Pee-wee asked.
They didn't have no fighting around Comoran Bay, was the answer. They had more fighting in a juke joint outside of Fort Eustis than I seen all the time I've been over here.
It sounded good. Pee-wee and the Spec Four played checkers for a while, and then he played with an Italian from Connecticut. We told him what the Spec Four had said about not seeing any fighting.
I heard it was over anyway, the guy said. They're supposed to be signing a truce or something in Paris.
That's 'cause they heard I was here,
Pee-wee said with his real serious look on his face. The Italian guy looked at me and looked at Pee-wee and shrugged. I was getting to like Pee-wee. They showed a movie in the day room and passed out some beer. Three guys from each hooch, which is what they called the barracks, had to pull guard duty, and the ranger volunteered for it. They had beer in the day room and a ping-pong table. There was a line for the ping-pong table, so we watched the news from the States. They didn't mention anything about Nam. The next morning, about half of our hooch got their orders. Most of them were going to some place called Ku Chi. The rest of us sat around or played three-man basketball.
Let's go to town, Pee-wee said.
Where's town? Pee-wee went into the HQ hooch to find out where Town was, just as they were looking for somebody else to pull guard duty, and he got put on. I went back to our hooch and wrote my first letter to Kenny. I told him that I had heard that there was going to be a truce, and there wouldn't be any more fighting. I also told him I would bring him back a souvenir if I could. Saturday, my 9th day in country. The army paper, Stars and Stripes, was full of the truce talks in Paris, but the war was still going on. In the distance, F-100 streaked across the sky. I saw a lot of planes, mostly jets and helicopters, and all ours. I didn't see any enemy planes. I didn't even know if they had any.
Yo, Perry.
What?
When they gonna get us into this war, man?
We have to get orientated first, I said. I heard that the orientation officer broke his ankle playing basketball.
He probably a damn Kong, Pee-wee said. You ready to get into it?
Yeah.
Damn straight, Pee-wee said. We gotta get into it before it's over.
I was less nervous than I was when I first got in country. We were in Nam to stop the North Vietnamese from taking over South Vietnam. I didn't really feel gung-ho or anything, but I was ready to do my part. One of the new guys who came in was from Fort Dix. He looked like one of the characters from an Archie Andrews comic, but he was so scared it wasn't funny. He told us his name was Jenkins.
What's it like so far?
He asked Pee-wee.
Ain't nothing to it, Pee-wee said. You been here long?
Jenkins asked.
8 months,
Pee-wee lied.
I gotta kill 8 more Kong before I get my quota. Then I can go home.
How many you killed so far?
132,
Pee-wee said.
I weigh 140. Whatever you weigh, that's how many you gotta kill to leave early.
I never heard of that, Jenkins said.
That ain't for regular rotation,
Pee-wee went on.
That's just so you can leave early.
Oh. Jenkins took it all in.
Air Force guys can get their quota in 1 or 2 days,
Pee-wee said.
What did you do, machine gun most of them?
Jenkins' eyes were wide.
Nah, man,
Pee-wee shook his head.
They issue you so many bullets per week, see? But each one you turn back in, you get a quarter for. So mostly, I sneak up on the suckers and cut their throats. That way I save my bullets. Way I figure, by the time I get back to the world, I have me enough to buy a little Chevy.
None of that is true, Jenkins said. He was pissed at Pee-wee for pulling his leg. The sergeant came in and picked 3 guys for guard duty. The ranger volunteered again, and they got Jenkins and 1 other guy. Jenkins was shaking when he left the hooch.
Don't forget to save your bullets,
Pee-wee called out to him. That night, the mosquitoes ate us up. I had bites all over my body. Back home, I thought mosquitoes never bit black people. Not as much as they bit white people, anyway. Maybe Vietnamese mosquitoes just bit blacks and whites and didn't bite Asians. We finally got the orientation lecture. This young-looking lieutenant showed us a slide of a map of Nam. Then he showed us where we were.
You are not in Disneyland, he said. The little people you see running around over here are not Mouseketeers. Some of them are friendly, and some of them have a strong desire to kill you. If you remember that and manage to kill them before they kill you, then you have a good chance of getting through your year of service here. Take your pills, 1 a week for malaria, 2 a week if you're too stupid to remember the day you last took them. Stay away from the women. They got venereal diseases over here that eat penicillin for breakfast. 3/4 of the women over here have it. They got crabs over here that line up every morning to get a shot of DDT. It wakes them up, gets their day started right. Stay away from the black market. Anything you buy that's worth a damn will be taken away from you or you'll lose it. Stay away from dope. There's only 2 kinds of people in Nam. People who are alert 24 hours a day and people who are dead. If you see anything else they got over here that we don't have at home, stay away from it. What these people use on a daily basis will kill you as fast as an RPG.
What's an RPG?
a guy in the front asked.
That's a rocket-propelled grenade. Stay away from them, too. If you have any more questions, ask your unit commanders when you reach them. Good luck.
When we got outside, the mosquitoes got us. The lieutenant hadn't even mentioned them, but we had been given a supply of insect repellent. Orders. Me, Pee-wee, Jenkins, and another guy were assigned to the 196th. We were going to Chulai. I remembered that was where Judy Duncan was assigned.
What's that like? Jenkins asked the sergeant in headquarters.
That's First Corps, the sergeant said. All you do up there is look around for Charlie, and when you see him, you call the Marines. Light stuff.
Charlie?
Jenkins looked toward me and Pee-wee.
Charlie is the bad guy over here.
The sergeant put his arm around Jenkins' shoulders. He was obviously enjoying himself.
Sometimes we call him Charlie. Sometimes we call him Victor Charlie. Sometimes we call him Viet Cong. That is, unless he sends us his business card with his full name and address on it.
We packed our gear and lined up outside, waiting for the truck to the airport. We were going to Chulai in a C-47. I thought guys from other hooches were going, but there were only the four of us.
I bet I kill me a Kong before you get one,
Pee-wee said. You can have them all, I said.
You scared?
Yeah, I said.
You ain't scared? No, man, I'm just surprised,
Pee-wee said.
I didn't think they was gonna have no real fighting in this here war.
How come?
I'll tell you how I got in this mess. Me and this dude I used to hang with sometimes was out in front of the projects where I lived, and he said to me he was gonna join the army. So he said to come on down to the recruiting office with him.
Pee-wee was sitting on his gear picking out his hair.
So we go on down, and the recruiting sergeant asked him if he ever got into any trouble. Stick, that was this guy's name, said yeah. He already done shot him 4 or 5 people. The recruiting sergeant said he can't get in no army because they don't be taking no rowdy dudes like him. I figure if they don't take no rowdy dudes, the army had to be pretty cool. If they really meant to be doing a whole lot of killing and carrying on, they should go get them suckers from the projects, because that's all they like to do anyway.
So you joined up?
Yeah,
Pee-wee said.
But I think I got tricked.
Pee-wee looked out over the trucks, which were mostly packed with crates of rations and supplies. The land beyond them was flat as far as we could see in one direction. In the other direction, where we thought the action would be, there were mountains shrouded in haze. Hey, at least I ain't rowdy, I said. Pee-wee looked at me and smiled.
Yo, you remember that brother wanted to mingle our blood and stuff?
Yeah.
Maybe we could do that stuff with some spit or something,
Pee-wee said. He spit on his hand and held it up. I spit on mine, and we exchanged fives. It felt good. Pee-wee didn't say much after that, and neither did I. I was scared. My mouth was going dry, and I could see that Pee-wee was scared, too. Jenkins was crying. It made me feel a little better to see him crying like that.
Load 'em up!
Me and Pee-wee got on the trucks between boxes of peanut butter and started to the airport and to wherever the hell Chulai was. Chapter 3. Most of the flight to Chulai was over water. A sergeant with us said that the plane swung out over the water to avoid anti-aircraft fire. Chulai was cooler than the area we had come from, but not much. It was still muggy. They had expected us earlier, and the lieutenant who directed us to the truck that would take us to our units seemed pissed.
We can't hold these trucks up any longer, so you guys are going to have to chow down your units, he said. When I call your name, get right in the back of the first truck. Keep your hands and arms in the truck and leave that netting up. You don't want to be sitting in there when some slant throws a grenade in the back.
The lieutenant was sharp. His brass belt buckle and insignia were shined. and his uniform was creased in all the right places. Chu Lai seemed less frantic than Tan Son Nhut. I was looking around, trying to figure out what Chu Lai was like, when I heard my name.
"Any of you guys know this Perry?"
the lieutenant was asking. "I'm Perry," I said.
"Well, wake the hell up, soldier."
"Yes, sir."
"We'll get on the damn truck."
"Yes, sir."
When I got in the back of the truck, Pee-wee was cracking up. I laughed with him. Jenkins started imitating the sergeant, and he had his voice down perfectly.
"Hey, are you an actor?"
Pee-wee asked.
"No, I can just..."
Jenkins's voice trailed off.
"Do it again."
Pee-wee nudged Jenkins's foot. Jenkins did it again, and Pee-wee cracked up again. I thought Jenkins was going to be fun after all. Pee-wee pulled the net over the back end of the truck and tied it down. Then we started off. The back of the truck was like an oven. We started off reasonably slow, and I got my first glimpse of the base. It looked okay. The movement cooled the truck off a little, and I thought the ride wouldn't be bad. Then we went through the gate and an outer checkpoint, and the driver picked up speed. We were bounced around the back of the truck like crazy. I had to hold on to the sides and keep standing. Sitting in the bouncing truck was impossible. We arrived at headquarters company a half hour or so after we left the main base at Chu Lai. The captain who greeted us was wearing a flak jacket, the heavy vest that was supposed to stop bullets and shrapnel. There were big rings of sweat under his arms and a pool of sweat in the hollow of his neck. He glanced at each of us and checked our names off on his copy of our orders. The GIs I saw at Chu Lai looked sharp enough to be in a parade. These guys looked as if they had just come in from a hard day's work. A damn hard day's work. Most of the guys who had come with us from Chu Lai were assigned to one of the row of hooches behind us. Me, Pee-wee, and Jenkins were told we would be going out to Alpha Company. A chopper was supposed to take us and one other guy out to the company. In the meantime, we had to load a pump onto the truck we came on. The pump wasn't crated, and it was hard to get a grip on it. Pee-wee and Jenkins were on one side of it, and I was on the other, but we couldn't get it up on the truck. Then an officer sent another guy over. His name tag read Johnson. He was black and as tall as I was, but bigger.
"We're supposed to..."
Pee-wee was pointing to the pump when Johnson reached down and grabbed it. He grunted, rocked backward, and brought the pump to his knees. He grunted again, lifted the pump onto the back of the truck, turned slowly, and walked away.
"Amen," Pee-wee called out behind him. "Amen."
"Sir, what is it?"
"Did you notice that I had a medical profile?"
The captain looked at his clipboard, looked up at me, and then back down to the clipboard.
"I don't see anything about a profile here," he said. "What's your name?"
"Perry, sir."
"You got a lot of pain?"
"No, but every once in a while the knee sort of gives way," I said. "That's why they gave me the profile."
"You get to your company commander. Mention your profile to him."
The officer at the replacement company said
he was already walking away, and I had the feeling that he wasn't particularly interested in my profile. We were told by a corporal that Alpha Company was in the deep.
"In the deep what?"
Pee-wee asked. "In the deep boonies," was the answer. We were supposed to get to the deep boonies by chopper. We waited for 3 hours for one to come and get us, but none came. We found a mess hall and ate. Jenkins didn't feel like eating. I could tell he was still scared out of his mind.
"What were you trained for?" I asked him.
"My MOS is infantry."
"You went to advanced training for infantry?"
Pee-wee looked up at Jenkins.
"Yeah."
"You look like a clerk typist or something like that,"
Pee-wee said.
"My father's a colonel," Jenkins said. "He wanted me to be infantry. He's got this thing. He calls it his game plan.
First I volunteer for the army, then I volunteer for infantry and take advanced individual training in infantry. I serve my time over here, then I go to officer's candidate school. There were Vietnamese people working behind the counter. They looked peaceful enough, and so small. I was 6'3", and many of them seemed a good foot shorter than I was. Johnson, the guy who had lifted the pump onto the truck, turned out to be going to Alpha Company with us. He brought his gear over and sat with us.
"Where are you from?"
Pee-wee asked Johnson.
"Savannah."
"Savannah, Georgia?
You ever been there?"
"No, and I don't want to go there either."
"How you know what it like if you ain't never been there?"
Johnson was eating his second dish of ice cream. He was about as black as a human being could get and as thick as he was wide. Even the whites of his eyes were dark. When he wasn't talking or chewing, his mouth sort of hung open. It hung open as he stared across the table at Pee-wee.
"I ain't never been to hell," Pee-wee said, "but I heard enough about it not to want to go there for no damn vacation."
"Where you from?"
Johnson was pissed at Pee-wee for dumping on Georgia.
"Chicago."
"Chicago ain't nothing."
"Neither is your daddy,"
Pee-wee said. Pee-wee didn't raise his voice when he said it, and he didn't smile. What he was saying was that he didn't care how big Johnson was. I glanced over at Jenkins, who was looking down into his food.
"You kind of little to be talking about somebody's daddy."
Johnson pushed the words out through thick lips.
"No shit. You guys think we should stay in here or get back outside in case they come looking for us?"
I asked, hoping to cut off a confrontation. They both looked at me like I had said something wrong. I was in the wrong war. We finished eating and went back out to the pickup zone where the chopper was supposed to be. We asked around to see if anybody had been looking for us.
"You guys waiting for a lift to Alpha Company?"
A short guy wearing what I thought was a flight suit came over to us.
"Yeah,"
Johnson said.
"I'm looking around for some smokes,"
the short guy said.
"You guys wait here."
He started off towards some low Quonset huts off to the left. It was getting cooler, but the humidity was so high I was dripping wet. We found some shade, dropped our gear, and Johnson and Pee-wee went off looking for a latrine. Jenkins sat on the ground with his head in his hands, and I asked him how he was doing.
"I think I'm going to die over here," he said.
"You're not going to die," I said. "Most guys over here won't ever fire their rifles. I mean, they won't ever really shoot at anybody."
"Who told you that?"
"A major I had at Devon's," I said.
"He probably wasn't ever over here,"
Jenkins said.
"Hey, it won't be that bad, man."
"Thanks."
He looked up at me and forced a smile. Jenkins acted as if he didn't want to talk anymore, and so I didn't talk either. Pee-wee came back from the latrine. "Where's Johnson?"
"That country fool,"
Pee-wee sat on the ground between me and Jenkins. "He in there, sitting on the john, trying to figure out how to shit." "You better leave that guy alone."
"He better leave Pee-wee alone,"
was the answer. The chopper pilot got back an hour after sunset and said we'd have to wait until morning. You could smell the booze from 3 feet away. He was so high he couldn't stand straight. I figured the guy must have been a career guy. A lot of the career guys drank heavily. It took us 2 more hours to find a place to bunk for the night. In the middle of the night, I woke. I thought I was hearing thunder. Then I realized that it was artillery. I went outside and looked around. In the distance, someone was shooting off flares. In a way, it was beautiful, like brilliant white and red flowers against the dark sky. They left behind puffs of colored smoke that drifted away like tiny fairy clouds. Johnson slept naked on one side, snoring. Pee-wee lay on his back, arms and legs spread, eyes not completely closed. Jenkins had his head under the blanket. Morning. The chopper pilot came to get us. He was bright-eyed, shorter than I thought he was the night before. We piled our gear on and climbed on. It was my first chopper ride. I had missed that part of training when I got the medical profile. No marching, no prolonged field duty, no combat. I had seen the doctor at Fort Devens sign it. He was supposed to have sent it to the company. The chopper trembled and rattled. Then it lifted slowly, tilted, and jerked into the air. It was the noise I hated. More than the wind through the open door. More than the slow speed or the sitting still in the air waiting to fall, I hated the noise. I looked over at Johnson. The one expression he had in the world was on his face. Pee-wee was busy looking out the door. Jenkins had his eyes closed and his knuckles were white from holding on to the seat.
Which one of you is Perry?
We had reached Alpha Company in the boonies and were sitting in the commanding officer's hooch. A stream of tobacco juice oozed from the side of the captain's mouth.
I am. You supposed to have a profile or something, right?
Yes, sir.
Well, they got it listed that you're concerned with it, the captain said. You got any pains or anything?
Not right now, I said. But I got a bad knee.
You been wounded in the knees?
From playing basketball, I said.
Yeah, okay.
The captain looked me up and down.
I'm sending a radio message through to look up your medical records. In the meantime, I'll just let you stay with the squad. You'll be okay.
Yes, sir.
Fact is, all you guys better go on over and stay with the squad for a few days. I got word this morning that we'll probably be moving down to Third Corps and then ship over to Hawaii from there.
Hawaii?
Yeah. Looks like this thing is about over, the captain said. What I want you boys to do is to listen to your squad leaders and try to keep yourselves alive.
We got weapons. Me, Pee-wee, and Jenkins got the usual M16 rifles. Johnson, who had had machine gun training, got an M60. It was a big, wicked-looking weapon that made the M16s look almost fragile in comparison. Johnson signed for it, took it by the handle, and walked away without even looking at it. They fit each other. We were asked if we wanted anything else. Pee-wee asked for and got a pistol in addition to his M16.
You want a pistol?
The armorer asked me.
What for?
I asked. He didn't answer. I didn't want to be close enough to anybody to shoot him with a pistol.
Make sure you keep those M16s clean, he said. Don't go believing that stuff about how it's going to work no matter what happens to it. You don't clean that piece, Charlie is going to clean your ass.
We were assigned a hooch and found bunks. I wondered what had happened to the guys who had had the bunks before we got them, but I sure as hell wasn't going to ask anybody.
Okay, listen up.
A soft-voiced lieutenant stuck his head into the tent. His name tag read, Carol.
I'm your platoon leader. You guys have any problems, you let me know through your squad leader. Anything really heavy, and you can come right to me with it. This is a book platoon. We do everything by the book. You new guys better listen and learn. That way you get to be old guys. Everybody's talking about Hawaii. There's plenty of time to think about getting out of here and getting to Hawaii when we're at the airport on the way out. Until then, keep your mind on your work. That's all, and good luck.
The rest of the squad was outside playing volleyball. We unloaded our gear and picked out bunks to lie on. There was gear on some of the other bunks. An M79 grenade launcher lay across one. There were copies of Playboy on another.
Hey, Johnson, Bet you didn't have nothing this good down in Georgia, huh?
Pee-wee said.
You really need to die young, don't you?
Johnson grunted the words out.
What you doing Georgia anyway?
Pee-wee said. Johnson got up on one elbow and looked over at him. I thought he was mad, but he just grinned at Pee-wee.
If the man give me a job back home, I wouldn't be doing this job over here, he said. Guess you didn't know that, huh?
They kept at it for a while, Pee-wee agitating until I felt that for him it was just some kind of sport. Find somebody big and mean looking to mess with, and then push your luck. I started writing a letter to Mama. I hadn't written much during basic training, but now I wanted to, and I really wasn't sure why. I started writing about the trip over, remembered that I had already written about that, and started again. The second start was about how I was glad that the war was in Vietnam and not home, but that didn't sound right either. I was looking for things to say, but everything sounded lame. The track over the gym in Stuyvesant High School was so small, you had to run around it nearly 15 times to go a mile. As I ran around that day, I could hear Mrs. Leibold's words echo in my ears.
You have to get out of yourself, Perry, she had said. You're too young to be just an observer in life.
I was 15 and painfully aware that I was just an observer in life. I didn't want to get into what was going on at home, about how Mom seemed to be falling apart, and how I couldn't think about much else than keeping us together. Being an observer hadn't been so bad in Stuyvesant. There was always a way to frame things, to put them into a romantic setting that made you feel good. Even the loneliness I felt sometimes was okay. I could break the loneliness, the feeling of not belonging to the life that teemed around me, by going to the basketball courts. I was somebody else there. Mr. In-Your-Face, jiving and driving, looping and hooping, staying clean and being mean, the inside rover till the game was over. But sometimes even that didn't work. Sometimes, when I was tired and the competition was really rough, things would change for me. There would be a flow of action around me, and it would seem as if I were playing outside of myself, watching myself play ball. Watching myself trying to establish a place for myself on the hard park courts. It was then that I would feel a pressure to give in, to let a rebound go over my head, to take the outside shot when I knew I had to take the ball inside. I told Kenny about the feeling, and he hadn't understood it. I told Mrs. Leibold, my English teacher, and she said that it was what separated heroes from humans, the not giving in. And I hadn't understood that. It was a weakness in my game. Not about being a hero. Pee-wee said something that pissed Johnson off, and Johnson started to get off his bunk. Pee-wee pulled his M16 across his body.
Come on, he said. I got something for you, Georgia boy.
I wanted to say something to Pee-wee, but thought better of it. It came to me that Pee-wee could be crazy. I caught Jenkins looking at me and shrugged. The squad we were assigned to came in. They were arguing over who won a volleyball game. They saw us, and one guy beckoned for me to get up. He looked around and then pointed to another bunk. I got up and moved my gear to it, and he laid on the bunk that I had been on.
You the Cherries?
A tall, thin-faced sergeant.
We're the new man, Pee-wee said. What's your name?
The sergeant asked.
My friends call me Pee-wee. You can call me Mr. Gates. Uh-huh. Well, my name is Simpson, and I'm the sergeant of this here squad. I'm going to tell you guys something.
The sergeant was black with a high voice that seemed to get higher with every word.
I ain't got but 120 days left over here. If we go to Hawaii, then I ain't got that. Now, I ain't about to let neither one of you fools kill me. You hear? We look like Kongs to you,
Pee-wee said.
You look like cherries,
the sergeant said.
I'd rather go out and mess with a whole bunch of Charlies instead of y'all cherries. That's the truth, too.
I made believe I was scratching my forehead so my hand would cover my face. The guy was strange. Thinking we were going to kill him when we were fighting a war with the communists was weird. The rest of the squad consisted of one black guy and four white guys. They played cards in the afternoon and asked us if we had heard anything more about Hawaii. Later, we played volleyball against another squad and won. Sergeant Simpson said that our victory was a good sign.